Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Sorry that today's program will contain quite a bit of bad news, but hang in there. I hope this informs, maybe entertains us a little bit, and don't think there's much to amuse you as we go along. However, stay with me, and that will eventually happen. First of all, parts of our planet will become uninhabitable. Life in some places on the planet is rapidly reaching the point where it will be too hot for the species that live there. They will be unable to survive. This, according to a major report which has just been released by an international committee of climate experts. With climate change, some parts of the planet will become uninhabitable, according to the report. This is a working group for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and is made up of dozens of prominent scientists. The report assesses scientific literature which documents the devastating effects of human-caused climate change on society and on ecosystems worldwide. The group studied the vulnerability of people and ecosystems to the changing climate and how adaptation could help reduce the risks. Human-induced climate change, including more frequent and intense extreme events, has caused widespread adverse impacts, and it has related losses also and damages to nature and people. Beyond natural climate variability that I believe we notice now is taking place. In any event, urgent action is needed to curb rising temperatures and limit the effects of climate change, which is already having an impact on our physical and mental health, in addition to the well-being of our planet. The committee established by the United Nations Environment Program and the World Meteorological Organization back in 1988 provides scientific assessments on climate change and its implications and risks. These assessments are released every 6 to 7 years. And they're meant to provide governments around the world with information in order to develop climate policies. Monday's report, that's yesterday, prepared by 270 top scientists from 67 countries, builds on a report last summer by the panel's Working Group One, which made headlines for its bleak warning of a code red for humanity. Increased heat waves, droughts, floods are already exceeding planets and animals' tolerance thresholds. And it's driving mass mortalities in species such as trees and corals. It's not just ecosystems and weather that's being affected by this warming. Human consequences are being documented around the globe. People are suffering and dying from climate change. And rising temperatures are harming pregnancy outcomes. The report highlights a pressing need to ramp up adaptation. Moreover, several authors speaking on a call last Sunday weren't without hope. Yet, the report presents some options for quick action in order to avert the worst consequences that are seen. There are multiple pathways communities and nations can pursue to achieve climate resilient development. But the need is to act now, and it is an urgent one. The window for implementing system and transitions is narrowing. We've already eliminated some possible pathways because of our past choices. Existing development patterns, combined with climate change, are leading the world away from sustainable development. And some of the harm to well-being already is accelerating and cannot be prevented. Even if global warming is limited to the goal of 1.5 degrees Celsius, human life, safety, and livelihoods across North America will be placed at risk from sea level rise, from severe storms, hurricanes, especially in coastal areas. The increasingly intense storms combined with sea level rise will result in losses and damages in the billions of dollars. And unfortunately, the negative impacts of climate change have disproportionate effects on those people that are least able to respond. The poorest and the most vulnerable communities. Delays in climate action, which have been wrought by misinformation about climate change science, have made the need to act urgently very clear. Did you know that the dinosaurs disappeared, perhaps in spring? And this, for your information today, springtime often is associated with blooming flowers, sunshine, and perfect weather. Now, it is a time associated with the time when the dinosaurs were wiped off the face of the earth. This, in a new study which has just been published in the Journal of Nature. Dinosaurs went extinct roughly 66 million years ago, marking the end of the Cretaceous period. After an asteroid about 7 miles wide struck what is now the Yucatan Peninsula off of Mexico. But scientists have been confused over the time of the year the asteroid hit and how some animals, such as birds and crocodiles and snakes, managed to survive while dinosaurs and other marine life didn't. Paleontologists in 2019 discovered a fossil graveyard in a fossil-rich area known as Tanis in North Dakota, and it contained a group of animals that died shortly after the asteroid hit the Earth. Their death came from a tsunami-like wave filled with rocks and glass that buried the animals alive and probably killing them within an hour of the asteroid's impact. Researchers also discovered fossils of paddlefishes and sturgeons in Tanis that were well preserved. It was obvious that they needed to analyze these bones to get valuable information about the moment of impact. Researchers took the fossils to the European Synchrotron Radiation Facility, which is in France, in order to use a particle accelerator. And this machine produces the world's brightest X-rays. Using the technology, the team of researchers noticed there was seasonal growth on the bones, similar to trees, in that there was a new layer on the bone from each year. What the scans also showed was how the shape and sizes of the bones varied depending upon the seasons. All fishbone cell densities and volumes can indicate the season. And because the accelerator also could capture the sizes, the researchers were able to determine when the asteroid hit. Another confirmation the team received was the analysis of carbon that was in the bones, and it showed how much plankton was present at the time. Plankton are most abundant during the summer, but the organisms were near summer levels, indicating their presence was on the rise. They saw that both cell density and volumes were on the rise, but had not yet peaked during the year of death, which implied that growth abruptly stopped in spring. Finding out what the season asteroid hit gives for possible answers on why some animals went extinct and others didn't will be some very valuable research. Because it was spring in the northern hemisphere, animals and plant life were ending their hibernation periods or were in the beginning stages of life, meaning their chances of surviving were little to none. On the other hand, it was fall in the southern hemisphere. That meant that they could be preparing to hibernate and have places to hide from the cataclysmic event. Southern hemisphere ecosystems, which were struck during the autumn, appear to have recovered as much as twice as fast as northern hemisphere communities. They were consistent with a seasonal effect. Additional modes of seasonal dormancy and or what is called estivation nowadays are practiced by various mammals, as well as certain amphibians and birds and crocodiles, and could have fluctuated further underground for survival. The findings are the first step in pinpointing the exact date the asteroid hit, and could explain how some animals survived mass extinction and others didn't. Well, I'm back, and I've got a pronunciation exercise here that pertains to the recent very unpleasant event in Ukraine. Ukraine is a former Soviet socialist republic. So there can be some confusion about the pronunciations of parts of the country. Even how the country is referred to can be problematic. Under Soviet rule, the country was usually referred to as the Ukraine in the English language. The Ukrainians today prefer to drop the from Ukraine and simply refer to it as Ukraine. The use of the Ukraine implies a subordinate status to Russia. This is change has also affected pronunciation. For example, we're hearing about the capital city of Kyiv, and some of you may have been pronouncing that Kiev. Well, Kyiv, pronounced K-double-E, and then that's emphasized, and then of EV. So Kyiv is the capital of Ukraine, and it was formerly Kiev. Kiev, though, is the Russian version of the name. And the name was changed because it referred to the city, and Ukraine sought to promote its own identity and not the name of the city under Russian control. And then there's Donetsk. Donetsk is the name of the capital city of Donetsk region in eastern Ukraine. Since 2014, pro-Russian separatist forces that fought in the region to gain control. And Russian President Vladimir Putin recognized the independence of those separatist-held areas. They are Luhansk. I'll say that again. Luhansk. The name of the region and its capital city as well, to the north of Donetsk. And like Donetsk, Luhansk is a breakaway region. The Russian spelling is Lugansk, the pronunciation being Lugansk. So there's quite a bit of difference there. And finally, the term Donbas. This word refers to the region of southeastern Ukraine that includes Donetsk and Luhansk. The term Donbas is an acronym, which means Donetsk coal basin. So when you say Donbas, everyone understands in Russia and in Ukraine that you're talking about the southeastern part of Ukraine, where the coal mines are plentiful. And this is one reason it is an attractive target for occupation. And then a bit of information about this southeastern portion of Ukraine. Before Russia's pre-dawn attack on Ukraine, the world's eyes had been trained on Donetsk and Luhansk. Those were the breakaway regions in an area known as Donbas. President Putin signed decrees recognizing the independence of Donetsk and Luhansk and ordering military action there. Russian lawmakers ratified the arrangement, allowing the Kremlin to provide military support. The area of Ukraine has a population of about 44 million people and is approximately 233,000 square miles. And comparing that to the United States, it's approximately the size of six US states between Chicago and Washington and New York on the East Coast. The Donbas region within Ukraine is about 6,500 square miles, and it's roughly the size of Greater New York City and the Philadelphia metropolitan areas. This is information which I hope helps to follow the day's events in Ukraine. And there'll be more in the near future. So we'll take a break and be right back. I wanted to end today's program by telling you a bit about the surprising benefits of mushrooms. These edible fungi supply a wide array of nutrients. Different types of mushrooms have different amounts of nutrients, but overall, mushrooms are a wonderful source of minerals, potassium, and selenium. Potassium can help lower high blood pressure, while selenium is an antioxidant that protects your cells from free radicals. If free radicals accumulate faster than your body can neutralize them, their damaging effects can contribute to chronic diseases such as heart disease and age-related macular degeneration. Mushrooms are also the leading dietary source of ergothionine, an antioxidant known for its role in supporting the immune system. Certain mushrooms, particularly white baby bellas and portobellos, can supply vitamin D. Some producers expose fungi to ultraviolet light, which prompts them to make the vitamin, similar to the way that sunlight on skin triggers vitamin D production in the body. Look for those listing 10 MCG or more per serving, about half your daily need on the label. But I think you should also consider shroom burgers. Shroom burgers. Mushrooms have a deep savory flavor called umami and a meaty texture, making them really good substitutes for beef burgers. There are two ways to do this. You can grill a large portobello and put it in a bun with burger fixings, sans the meat. Or you can blend chopped mushrooms with ground meat. This lets you increase the number of burgers you can make and lowers the calories and saturated fat per burger. Overall, mushrooms are a very sustainable food. They grow with minimal water and produce a high yield on a small plot of land. So everyone run out and plant mushrooms. It's good for us. And with that, it's time for me to think about leaving you today. Next time, I'm going to be talking about the automat and its disappearance. If you don't know what the automat is, Google that word, automat, AUTOMAT. And I'm going to talk about the invention of the hydromatic transmission. I know that's not a very romantic sounding name or term, but I think you'll be interested in it. And so I want you to be kind to each other out there. Be safe. Be healthy. We look for your return next time to 101.5 on your dial. We're here to entertain you, to give you information, and maybe to amuse you once in a while. That's why I added Schroomburgers in today's show. But with that in mind, it's time to go down the road again with my friend Willie Nelson. Willie and I look for new items that are appropriate for a little of this, a little of that. Now, please come back. Willie and I are waiting for you. You have a very good day. See you later. Bye-bye.